you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
French President Macron has announced a three-week nationwide school closure, ban on domestic travel amid the surge of the virus in France. Again, this just received by us now. French President Macron, three-week nationwide school closure and domestic travel ban. Also, last hour on Air Talk, we were talking about the orange tier for COVID-19 and what that means for houses of worship and singing, because we had a listener ask about that. Nothing changes on the current rules for that until you're out of the color-coded tiers. So even, I think it's the yellow that's the least restrictive. Even when you're in that, the group singing, as I understand it, is not allowed in houses of worship. All right, we turn our attention now to the U.S. Supreme Court. Very big case this morning in which arguments were heard. We'll hear a couple of clips shortly from the justices. But first, joining us from Bloomberg Law, U.S. Supreme Court reporter Kimberly Robinson. She also hosts the podcast from Bloomberg, Cases and Controversies. Kimberly Robinson, good to have you with us today.
And thanks for having me back on.
So let's start, first of all, with the case this morning. Lay out what is being decided about the NCAA versus a group of former college athletes.
Well, sure. At a very broad level, what the justices were considering this morning was whether or not the NCAA can enact rules that prohibit schools for paying for student athletes. And we're not talking here about salaries for paying. Instead, we're talking about education-based payments. Think of things like computers, musical instruments, and the like. And so the question for the justices is whether previous rulings that said, you know, our antitrust rules don't really belong in amateur sports, whether that ruling can stand or whether there needs to be some more flexibility. And, you know, we really see the athletes in this case arguing that, you know, the NCAA is making billions of dollars off of their play, and they're really just using these earlier rulings to exploit student athletes.
And this is separate from the whole issue of an athlete's ability to use his name, image, and likeness for their own financial benefit while they're playing for a college.
Right. So we see here what we're talking about is really when the students are in the school, what the school can provide to them to encourage them to play, to help them to play. And so we saw a lot of questions from the justices about, you know, what's wrong with allowing schools to pay for computers? They already pay for things like tuition and room and board. How is that going to, you know, put the sport itself in danger?
Well, let's hear from the justices. First, Justice Brett Kavanaugh.
It does seem, as Justice Kagan and Justice Gorsuch suggested, Justice Alito, the schools are conspiring with competitors, agreeing with competitors, I'll say that, to pay no salaries to the workers who are making the schools billions of dollars on the theory that consumers want the schools to pay their workers nothing. And that just seems entirely circular and even somewhat disturbing.
Did that seem to be the prevailing sentiment of the majority of the justices this morning?
Well, certainly the lawyer for the NCAA did get a lot of really tough questions like that from the justices. But, you know, I've said this before on this program that the way that the justices are hearing cases this term remotely makes it really hard to know where they stand. And so we saw some hard questions on the other side as well. But it didn't seem like at the end of the day, the justices are going to relax some of these rules. In particular, you know, you heard Justice Kavanaugh, who is a big basketball fan who played at Yale himself, you know, really express these concerns about the well-being of the athletes instead of the well-being of, you know, the NCAA itself.
And for a different perspective, Justice Stephen Breyer.
This is not an ordinary product. This is an effort to bring into the world something that's brought joy and all kinds of things to millions and millions of people, and it's only partly economic. about judges getting into the business of deciding how amateur sports should be run.
I love it because those two clips are such a succinct, you know, looking through the window from opposite direction perspectives, Kimberly.
That's right. And while Justice Kavanaugh was a really big basketball fan, Justice Breyer is a really big antitrust fan, which is where this case is. But, you know, that was the hard questions that I mentioned on the other side. There still was this concern about exploiting students. But then this, you know, trying to balance how far should courts go in getting involved with NCAA rules and with student athletes. And the NCAA's attorney really tried to point out that while this case focuses mostly on football and basketball, there are many other sports that this ruling has the potential to affect, which doesn't bring in those billions, which doesn't have that element of, you know, really exploiting the players.
Well, and it makes me wonder about the sports that are not as heavily televised, that don't draws large crowds, but for some schools they have a, you know, signature sport that they have a great deal of success in, and maybe you know, it's not that degree of commitment at other colleges. And if those schools that sort of, let's say it's crew, for example, that they're known for, and so they start, you know, buying all kinds of things for the student members of crew, is that going to have a big effect on that particular sport where it's not a revenue sport, and where maybe you've just got one or two schools that are like all in on it?
Yeah, and that was the argument that the NCAA's attorney really tried to make. He said, you know, really what we're talking about here is just two sports, and really what we're talking about is just maybe two dozen schools which are really able to, you know, lift this sport into billion-dollar money-making machines. But it has implications, you know, for other sports like crew, where you don't see these kinds of things. And so one thing that was brought up was that, you know, these students are often pushed to train so hard that they can't focus on their academics, and that the graduation rate among, you know, football players and basketballers is really poor. But when you look at other sport like crew or fencing, it's actually above what we see, you know, just regular students having. So there really is kind of some line walking that the justices are going to have to do here.
Well, and before I get complaints from crew people saying that's not how it works, I know nothing about crew. That was a hypothetical. So please don't get on me about how I describe the sport, but just using it as an example of a non-revenue sport. Also, some other big cases that the high court is taking up, and one with significant implications for California, a labor regulation put into place in this state back in 1975, allowing for union organizers to be able to go out into the fields here in California. Share with us a bit more about this case, because this could have very big implications for agriculture labor.
Well, that's right. You know, and as you mentioned, this was a case that comes out of California, and the California Supreme Court actually upheld this ruling in the 1970s, and it's been on the books ever since. And this is the kind of litigation that I think conservatives feel bolstered to bring now that we have a 6-3 majority court. But, you know, the thing that's really at issue here is whether or not union employee or union officials can go on to an employment site to access the workers where the workers really can't be found in any other place. And it's interesting to note that there's a federal law that allows this for many other industries, but it actually just cut out the agricultural industry. So beyond, you know, the implications for California and the agricultural industry, you know, it could have implications, you know, nationwide.
And the access is significant. I didn't realize until reading about this that union organizers can be on agricultural business land, on farms, up to 3 hours a day, 120 days a year. So they've got quite a bit of access to the workforce there.
That is true. And that's why you see the employers saying, you know, this is not something that California can't say needs to be done, but it's something that they have to provide the employers compensation for under what's called the takings clause. That is just the idea that if the government is going to take your property, they have to pay you for it. So, you know, here it's not really that they're arguing that they don't want them to have access, or they probably don't want them to, but they can have access. But it's really a question of what does the government need to do in order to allow that access to happen.
We're talking with Bloomberg Law's U.S. Supreme Court reporter Kimberly Robinson, co-host of Bloomberg Law's podcast Cases and Controversies. We're talking about the biggest cases the U.S. Supreme Court is dealing with this term. When are we going to start getting some of the results from the cases that have been heard most recently?
These cases are more likely to come out at the end of the court's term, which is in June. Of course, now that I've said that, they'll probably issue them all tomorrow, which is the next day that we're expecting opinions. But these are kind of typically the cases that we hear later in the term. Obviously, they take longer to write, so they're ones that we won't get for a few more months.
All right. And in the arguments that were presented, by the way, on that organized labor case, what was your sense of the justices' biggest concerns?
Well, you know, their biggest concerns were really this idea of allowing the government to come onto your property and how far that could go. At the same time, many of the justices noted that federal government, state governments already require people like safety inspectors to be able to go on to employers' properties. So, you know, what is the limit there? It's very similar to the NCAA case and many of the cases that the justices hear, where there really are two very strong competing interests, and the justices are trying to find the right in-between point to balance those interests.
Now, we just got word this week that the Supreme Court is taking on its first abortion case. And share with us a little bit about this case, and is it going to touch on the precedent of Roe v. Wade in any way?
Yeah, I don't think that this is the case that it has been built to be as, you know, the court's first foray into abortion. And that's because it's really a procedural question. You know, what happened here is a state official refused to defend an abortion law after it had been struck down, and another state official wants to intervene. And that's the question that the justices are going to hear. But there are other cases pending before the justices, one that's been waiting and languishing since September, that give the justices to really touch on, you know, Roe v. Wade. And so far, they haven't seemed eager to jump in.
They've also been very reluctant, it seems, in recent years to take on Second Amendment cases, even as they've been begged to, following the Heller decision, to further clarify, you know, what is the Second Amendment right regarding personal ownership or carrying of a weapon. Is it your sense that you know, there might be some things ripening that the court might be willing to take on?
Well, yes, you're right that there has been some hesitance. But again, I mentioned that 6-3 majority, and, you know, there's an indication that they might be taking up a case as early as next week that really addresses this issue. And, you know, regardless of, you know, the way that you view the Second Amendment, it really does seem like an area of the law that is just calling out for the Supreme Court to clarify. You know, it left open a lot of these really big questions on the Second Amendment that lower courts have had trouble coming to a decision on. And, you know, even they have been asking the justices to take this case. So there is one that the justices are going to consider actually tomorrow taking up.
Oh.
And again, we may hear about that sometime next week.
And do you know briefly what that case involves, or have you not gotten to that one yet?
No, this one really gets to the heart of the issues that were open in that big Heller case you mentioned, whether or not individuals have a Second Amendment right to carry their firearms outside of the home. So Heller stopped at the home, and there's really been no word from the Supreme Court whether that extends outside. And that's the question that's presented in this case squarely. And I will say it's also presented by a former Solicitor General that's the top lawyer at the U.S. Supreme Court for the federal government. And his word has a lot of sway with the justices. So, you know, it's one that's looking like it could be a good vehicle for the justices to take on this issue. But again, we never know until they tell us what it is that they're going to do.
Well, that's good. That if they take that on, that's going to be a very, very big and closely watched one, obviously. Kimberly, thank you very much for being with us, talking about these major Supreme Court cases, including the one which was argued today. We appreciate it very much.
Happy to do it.
Kimberly Robinson, U.S. Supreme Court reporter for Bloomberg Law, and she co-hosts the podcast, The Bloomberg Law Does, Cases and Controversies. You're listening to Where Talk on KPCC. It's just me and you. Coming up, we're going to open up the phones because I want to hear from you what you were late to adopt. Maybe your family members, your friends, your coworkers, you know, all were doing something or using technology, and it took you a long time to come around to it. What precipitates this conversation is the Apple Pan, the landmark 70-some-year-old restaurant in West L.A. that, once the pandemic hit, started taking credit cards. It had been cash only. So the Apple Pan taking credit cards, that's a big deal and a very late adopter, obviously, to that. What's an example where you've been a very recent or late adopter to something? 866-893-KPCC. I want to hear from you. We'll be back in 90 seconds.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.